Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 642 for comics originally released on November 27th, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman Creature of the Night number 4 of 4. And I expect there's probably a couple of listeners out there thinking, what title is this? I don't remember the first three.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
I remember that they came out, but man, this thing is way late.
Well, I looked it up to see how late is this thing, and the first issue came out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And the last issue came out over a year ago.
Yeah, first issue was November 29th, 2017. Then second issue was December 27th, 2017. Third issue was April 18th, 2018, and now we're getting to this.
We're almost at 2020. This is just nuts. I'm like, what happened? And I have some suspicions, but was their health okay, these two creators? I don't know.
What happened was clearly DC did not have them all in the can before soliciting.
Okay, all right.
I mean, that's obvious.
That's obvious. Okay, because I was going to say, I don't think anything happened to the creators, and it has some tones that reminded me of Batman.
There was certainly nothing in the letter page at the end that admitted to the two-year delay that explained the two-year delay.
No, they're just like, oh, sorry, this happened. I'm like, okay, no explanation at all. And this would be the perfect place for, like, if you're in the single issues, I didn't want to go dig through 2 years' worth of books, you know, to find these books to get caught up again. And I'm like, you know, give me something to get me caught up. It's been 2 years. There's no way I can remember what happened in issue one.
A previously on of some sort really would have helped.
Yeah. I mean, now, luckily, Busick is a good enough writer that I picked up. I was like, okay, I get the general gist, but I really can't remember much other than seeing the bat creature, which I was like, oh, that's Man-Bat, but it's not.
It's not. Starting with two wordless pages really didn't help me get back into the story.
No, it did not.
It's like, okay, there's this comic page that's, you know, framed and slashed up, and then we're in like this apartment or office or something that's been trashed. And then from there, it's like, okay, I'm starting to remember, all right, this isn't Bruce Wayne, it's Bruce Wayne Wright, and he's, you know, kind of considers himself sort of like Batman. Other stuff has happened, but it took a little ways into it for me to remember who the Alfred stand-in was, how this Robin, who's not a Batman and Robin kind of a Robin, but just a lady named Robin, how she fit into the story. I mean, it's not a bad read, and actually as a standalone issue, it reads surprisingly well.
I would agree with that. It was weird in that it read well.
But I went back to the ratings I'd given these the first three issues.
Yeah, what did you give them?
First was a C+, second was a B-, and then it went up to a B. And I'm like, oh, okay. It was trending up.
I remember when I first read it, the one thing I remember when I opened this, I was like, I remember I didn't enjoy the art that much, the art style. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with it, it's just not to my liking. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember this art. I remember all the text, the word text boxes being weird like that. They're like, they're scratched out on paper. And I remember the Man-Bat thing, and that's about it. And other than that, that's all I could remember. But like you said, I almost read this like a single issue because I can't remember what happened.
Yeah, these kinds of delays are unfortunate. They do happen for whatever reason. I go back to, again, that lack of any kind of previously in or anything to kind of ease us back into the story after like a year and a half delay. That really bothers me.
Yeah, me too. It was really frustrating, and it's like, you know, just because of that, you know, spoiler alert. No, I'm not going to spoil the comic, but I honestly knocked a point off because I'm like, if you're going to do that to the readers, which the single issue readers, we fund and amortize these costs so that they can come out with the trade.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm being abused at this point.
Yeah. You're
hitting me in the face and saying you're a single issue reader. Deal with it. And that's not cool.
There's a certain no-win situation they're in, because if they just said, oh, well, we're just going to collect it as trade, I would have been even more upset.
Yeah, I agree.
But this is one where they could have done a couple of pages at the beginning of the single issue here that had, here's a couple of pages that's just a quick recap to get you back into the story.
Something like that. And some type of, like, besides the, like, we're sorry, you know, hey, here's what happened. We had a lot on our plate. We thought we were going to have it done. You know, we tried to never let this happen. But it was more like, oh, whoops, it was late. You know, but yeah, the recap would have done a lot because, and like I said, a couple pages just saying, hey, previously on, da, 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 and I would have been in the flow. Okay, okay, okay. Here's who this person is. Here's who this person is. Instead of me having to get 10 or 12 pages into it and be like, oh, that's who this is. It's not Bruce Wayne. It's Bruce Wainwright. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is one where even a Marvel style kind of previously on text blurb
would have helped.
Would have helped. Particularly if it had the image of Robin, of Alfred, of this Batman creature, and reminding us, oh, yeah, this is what this creature is. Because when we first see the Batman character, basically Bruce Wainwright jumps off the penthouse ledge.
Yes.
And I'm like, is this suicide? Oh, he's turning into this mystical creature thing. Oh, that's right. I vaguely remember that.
I vaguely remember a bat creature.
So, I mean, this is one that I think it would have worked much better for me if the issue hadn't been delayed so long. And the shift near the end to kind of this Bruce's status quo really didn't work for me. It just kind of felt jarring almost.
Yeah.
But part of it was, I think it would have worked in the context of the four-issue series and the trade or whatever, but here I am reading a single issue, getting back up to speed after a year and a half, and it felt, in the pacing of just this issue, awkward.
Yes, I agree. And I don't know if it would have read better, and I'm not going to go back and read it to see if it would have read better, but yeah, it felt awkward to me too. And, you know, not to, you know, beat a dead horse, but I had visions of Tom King's run on Batman, you know, the PTSD, the hero who's not a hero, the troubled person. It kind of echoed there. And even some of the stuff that happened with the Alfred character in here, I don't know if it was intentionally delayed because it was too similar. I mean, it's not the same, but it's similar. That, you know, my conspiracy theory, well, let's delay it because, you know, it's too much like this. I don't know.
I don't think the delay was because of it, and I think there are certain aspects, if it had come out on time, it would have predated certain things in King's run that would have made this read better.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, probably. Because, yeah, this is what, going back to 2017, it's so hard to put my mind back to what was going on then.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where other Batman where we were. Things were at the time, and it's...
Yeah, and you know what's unfortunate is that Kurt Busiek is such a good writer, and I have enjoyed his writing so much. But this is not the first time I've been burned by Kurt Busiek and his writing. Like, so with this thing, then I had the Tooth and Claw, which turned into Autumn Lands, which just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I was enjoying his, what was this, the superhero title? I can't think of the name of it now.
Astro City?
Astro City, yeah. And it was supposed to go to the quarterly publication, but I don't know what happened to that.
That's a great question, because it was going to do that, I think, before Lazarus did, and we're already on three issues of Lazarus.
Did so it just disappeared, and so I don't know what happened. It feels like in Kurt's life, and you know, like I said, I hope he's healthy. I as far as I know, everything's good, but maybe he's working on something else, because it seems like everything he was doing just stopped and it disappeared.
Yeah, I don't know, because I know at one point he did have some health issues around, like, mercury poisoning or something like that really slowed him down. Particularly on things like Astro City, where he's doing a little bit of a deeper dive and stuff like that. But I don't know of anything recently that's been an issue.
Yeah, that's what's so weird. So, like, you know, I didn't dig into that or anything. But, you know, the thing that I like about this issue, you know, when I get into the likes, there's a lot of dislikes I have, you know, mm-hmm. the art and the lateness and the pacing, the jarring, is that he was able to write well enough that I read this like a single issue. And it can read like a single issue, which is impressive, because that's almost like one of his Astro City traits. You didn't need to read anything else, and it made sense.
Yeah, it was not as accessible as I'd hoped it'd be given the delay, but it was surprisingly accessible for the final issue of a miniseries.
Yeah, so that's kind of my hurrah and my saving grace for this book, is that he's one of the best writers I know, and it shows even in this.
I would agree with that. I think most other writers, this would have been just an abysmal read after this kind of a delay. And I felt this was surprisingly good, given how long it had been since I'd read the previous stuff.
Exactly. So it was good, and it was different, and it was frustrating, and it was so late that I felt so torn when I was reading it and, you know, going to judge it. But it read well enough that, like I said, I probably wouldn't go dig it up because I have so much stuff that I read and I'm backlogged on my trades. But if I had extra time, I wouldn't mind reading the story again from the beginning.
I hear what you're saying, but if this title started today, it wouldn't make it on my reading list.
I don't think it would either, because I've almost gone to the position that I'm starting to get rid of these 5-issue miniseries. Are you doing that too?
I'm certainly cutting way back on that kind of stuff, and this sort of a thing that's in its own little pocket continuity, likely to never be referenced again. It's already forgotten by now, and 2 years by now, it's like, who cares?
Yeah, it's kind of like a little vanity project. Hey, you're a great writer. Do your thing. You're a one-off story. But like you said, it's not going to really matter in the larger scheme of things. And I noticed both Marvel and DC have both been doing that, where they're going to like these short 5-issue series, like one-offs. And, you know, I was going through the previews earlier. I sent it in my preview spotlight clips.
Ah, cool.
Today, literally. So, but I was going through there, and I was like, man, there's a lot of these one of five. I'm like, and it's just starting to agitate me a little bit.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. To me, it's one thing if it's set in a shared universe where at least there's potential ramifications later, or it can matter. And I know there's some listeners out there, hey, if it's a good story, that's all that counts for them, and that's cool. But there's an aspect of, I'm all on board on that, but there's also a part of me that thinks if I read it and both don't remember it and have no reason to remember it years later, what's the point?
Yeah. I'm getting a little pickier in my reading, and I'm starting to see it when I'm doing my orders. My orders are still much larger than yours, but I used to almost, you know, check the box for everything from Marvel, check the box, everything from DC. I don't do that. You know, I cut a lot of nonsense out, stuff that I don't care about, stuff that I think won't matter. I don't mind reading Absolute Carnage without all the little tie-in side-ish stories. So I've just gotten pickier. It's just because I'm spending a lot of money, I'm spending a lot of time, and if the payoff's not there, then that's where I don't want to waste time or waste money, if that makes sense. But at the same time, some people are really passionate about it, and that's cool.
Yeah, agreed. I totally understand where you're coming from and agree with you, because again, I used to be all in at Marvel and DC. I've cut back. I dropped a lot of other publishers. And for a couple of different reasons, I'm actually giving serious thought to really going over my order this next time with the December order form and with a fine-tooth comb of, do I really need some of these?
Yeah, I know where you're coming from, because like I read my stack and I'm like, right now I'm at about, let's say, 50%, 60% that I'm like, wow, this is really good. But it's like, why am I getting that other 40? Why am I getting this?
Yeah.
And it's almost like that habitual thing. You know, I've just always gotten it, so I'm going to keep getting it. But that's not really a good reason to keep buying it.
No. And I think even though I've already gotten more selective, I may tighten it up a bit more.
Yeah. So, hey, we're kind of feeling the same thing. Isn't that weird?
Well, let's see how we do on grading on this, because while I thought this was a good read for what it was, to me, coming in, I mean, having read the three issues previously, but really having totally forgotten them, I felt I was coming in kind of cold to this with just vague recollections. I'm going with a C+ on this. It's not bad for what it is, but the reader I am today only got it because I had, when was this solicited? This is, I guess, only in August or so, whatever. I had gotten this because I'd gotten the other three.
Yeah, that's exactly the same thing with me.
And if I hadn't done that, like I said, if it started today, I wouldn't have bothered with it and I'd have been okay with it. It's not bad, but it's not what I'm wanting to read these days. And in the hands of any other writer, this would have been, I think, a train wreck of a last issue, given the delay. Busick did a good job. Generally landed the ending. There were some problems with it for me, but it was okay.
Yeah, it's a dark tone. It's okay. If it would have been on time, it probably would have been, for me, like a B- type thing. I'm guessing based on what I would have gleaned from the other issues, but I had to grade it for what it was. I gave it a C because it was late, and I felt like I was reading the last part of a story by a really great writer that the pacing felt off, and it's just something I wish I wouldn't have done, but I was too far in.
I think if this had come out on a monthly basis like it started at and had ended in February 2018, given how I'd gone from the C+ to the B- to the B, this probably would have gotten a B, maybe even a B+ for me at the time, but that's all hypothetical and I really don't know.
Yeah, we're guessing right now because it's so hard because you can't change that. And what's weird is somebody's going to pick this up and trade, and I bet you it'll read very well, and they'll really enjoy it. And there's nothing wrong with that because that's probably the way this should be read.
I think definitely the reading experience in the trade is invariably going to be better, and I think people should check it out if it sounds like a story they're into.
Yeah, if you like dark Batman stories, this is probably one you'd enjoy.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sounds good.
This is Fantastic Four Grand Design number 2 by Tom Scioli. I can't pronounce this. Jeez.
Scioli. I don't
know. Scioli. Let's go with Scioli. Man, where to start on this one?
I'm laughing. I'm sorry.
You don't even know where I'm going, and I think you're already on board with it.
Already there.
This did not work for me as well as the X-Men Grand Design stuff.
Oh my gosh. I felt like this was such a chore to read. Did you feel that?
I did too. And part of it was there is a 5x5 grid format. Now, sometimes he'll take two panels and do an extended widescreen, you know, so it's only like a double wide, single, you know, out of the top tier. But it made everything feel a little cramped, a little busy, and like I almost want to say a Cliff Notes version of some classic Fantastic Four tales.
Yes, that's exactly. I had literally written in my notes, I felt like I was reading Cliff Notes. Like, you know, when you went to school and you had to read the book and you're always like, oh, I don't want to read the book. And you read the Cliff Notes and you kind of go over the general points.
Imagine that, though. And then you've got like a sixth grader or whatever doing a reenactment of the story from the Cliff Notes.
That's bad. That's really bad.
Because there were a couple of places in here where I am not an expert in the early era of the Fantastic Four. But there were some story elements that don't seem to be from the comics, and a few that flat out are not from the comics of this era.
Yeah, it was weird because like they went over some classic stuff. You know, you got the Surfer in here, you got the Coming of Galactus, you had the appearance of the Inhumans, you have the Black Panther showing up, and yet they did it in such a jarring little tiny box way that it almost felt non-consequential. Everything did.
Yeah. Some of the aspects that really threw me is they recast Alicia an African American, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just weird.
It's like, why?
Not how she was.
Nope.
When I really started, and by this point I had pretty much checked out of the story, but when I really started saying, hey, wait a sec, this doesn't feel right, was when we got, I'm not even sure how far in it was, but the thing rings, do your thing. And Ben is using those to turn human again.
Yeah.
And
that's not the way it works.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's going on here?
The thing ring, do your thing has been in the comics, but it was in the FF with the Future Foundation. And it was when the, I forget her name, but the one who was in the robotic thing suit. I can't remember her name either. She used that to kind of get the suit on her in, you know, unstable molecule kind of a way. Where this really comes from is the cartoon from the 1979.
Is that where that's coming from?
Yeah, it was a Fred and Barney Meet the Thing Saturday morning cartoon. They never actually met. It was just some redone Flintstone stuff. And Hanna-Barbera had taken the thing, turned him into a teenager, and these rings turned him in and out of the thing.
Oh, so that's why I was like, I remember reading a lot of Fantastic Four. I haven't read all of it, but I'm like, where is this? I don't understand this. And that, I didn't watch the cartoon, so there you go.
And again, this is an era, because I got on board FF like after issue 200. I'd read a few earlier in 200s, but then like in the Burn era is really when I started getting on board. When we get the whole bit around Franklin's birth, and Reed becoming a Herald of Galactus, and he's like this Silver Surfer, but on a cube kind of a thing.
It's like, what's going on?
It's like, I don't recall ever having heard of that. Now, I know I wasn't reading those comics at the time, but surely that would have come up once in a while in a Marvel handbook, in a Marvel saga thing, in a flashback, in some sort of a reference in the, let's see, it was the 80s I started reading Fantastic Four. So the 80s, the 90s, the aughts, and the teens. In the last 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
But where I totally am like, this just doesn't make any sense, was when they were fighting, and this was after we had the brief little exodus to Secret Wars, which is when I was totally reading the Fantastic Four and got on board the rest of the Marvel Universe. They had the couple of other people doing, you know, Kirby, Dan, Brooklyn, and Jakey or whatever doing the Thing Rings Do Your Thing and all turning into to things of some sort. I'm like, where did that come from? But then somewhere in here, and I forget where it was, we got the Black Panther and a few others. Maybe it was a little before the Secret Wars stuff. But we get this Voltron riff.
I'm literally on that page because I thought that's where you were going. I'm looking at the
exactly where I'm going if I can find it.
I was like, yeah, it's kind of like about almost, it's like two pages or three pages past the midpoint. No, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4 pages past the four flips.
Oh, there it is. I see it. It's a few pages past the Reed Richards on the cube or whatever.
Yeah.
And we get multicolored panthers. And it's like a riff on the Power Rangers or whatever, you know, Pink Panther, Shuri, Yellow Panther, Zuni or whatever. And I'm like, Shuri wasn't around back then. We never had this kind of a Voltron thing. What the hell?
Where did the Voltron come from? And how is this not like, how are they not stealing the license? I was like, what is this? Because they're not lions, they're panthers. I was like, it's ridiculous because this is not the Fantastic Four.
When I got to the few pages of text at the end where they're kind of giving the credits, this referenced Fantastic Four 172 to 175 and 242 to 243.
Okay, is that in there?
Well, those are the issues referenced, I think, for this sort of a storyline. Now, I'm too lazy to go dig out those issues, and I don't think I have the 172 to 175. However, about 20 years ago, give or take, they released these DVD ROMs that had scanned PDFs of the entire run of the Fantastic Four and Silver Surfer.
Ah.
Those I pulled out. I skimmed through those and saw nothing remotely like this, which is exactly what I expected.
So this guy's just making up stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the recap of the Secret Wars stuff was kind of off, too.
So they created this Cliff Notes of the Fantastic Four, and it's a botched job. And they're throwing wrenches in there so that if you discuss this and you read this and you'll be like, I remember when the Fantastic Four did this, you look like a moron because you read the Cliff Notes and not the real books. Who knows?
The inaccurate Cliff Notes. I mean, grand design for the X-Men seemed to smoothly stitch together decades of X-Men continuity, which is a little hard to do because of the time travel and the retcons and stuff like that. And I'm not going to say it did it flawlessly, but it did it well.
Yeah, I felt like the Fantastic Four didn't need a retcon or needed their continuity fixed.
There's a couple of places they could certainly have glossed over and smoothed a few things, no doubt. But to do wholesale reimaginings based as much on cartoons from different decades and stuff than the comic, I mean, this was so loosely based on the Fantastic Four continuity as to be pretty off-putting.
Yeah, I agree. I read this and I was like, I don't recognize some of the stuff that's going on here. And I've read some of the old Fantastic Four stories, the real important ones, just to read them, you know, and have that knowledge of them. And I'm like, there's weird stuff in here I've never seen. And then the art is so tiny, it felt jarring. I mean, when the Thing goes into his human form and then goes back, that took place in two panels that were 2 inches by 2 inches, maybe, or an inch by 2 inches. I'm like, that's all you get. And that's like, it just felt like this was so hard to read, and it was so bizarre because there's weird stuff in there. What are they doing?
I have no earthly idea.
I came out of this thinking, why does this exist, and what are they doing? And this is nothing like the X-Men where they're trying to fix it and make it make sense, which, okay, there's the reason. But this worries me that they're going to come out with Avengers Grand Design and Defenders Grand Design and every other Grand Design, and I don't want to see that.
Based on the X-Men one, I would have been open for an Avengers one. Based on this,
yes,
it's really going to come down to who does it.
Exactly, because if it's not, it was what Piskor did the first one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he did a good job. If it's somebody like Scioli, I'm for sure done, and it would have to be someone who knows what they're doing, and the microscopic art is not working for me.
No, this was too tiny, too abbreviated, and it just seemed like a bad slideshow version of all of this.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. What's so weird is like, this was such a chore to read, and I was like, man, I wonder if John's going to love this. And that's why I was laughing, because I was like, oh man, I hope I'm not going to be eviscerating this on my own. And then like, here you are, you're like, you didn't enjoy it either. So I feel somewhat vindicated. by your opinion.
I so quickly got bored by the storytelling style and then so frustrated by the wild changes in continuity that it's like I don't know what they thought this was going to be or what they thought I thought it was going to be, but it is so almost a polar opposite to what the X-Men Grand Design stuff had done that it in my mind fairly permanently taints the whole Grand Design concept.
That's what I feel, and I kind of feel bad for Pisker, because Pisker did a great job, and I feel like this guy was trying to ape his style a little bit, and he did it very poorly, but he tried to, because the panels were a little bit small, but they were different, and so he tried to do that, and brought in cartoons, so anybody, I guess you had to watch all this stuff, and he's mashing it all together, and this I don't want anything to do with. I'm kind of done with it. I'm done with Grand Design, and unless it's an amazing writer, I'm really out.
Yeah, I'll look at the others and give them, you know, quick consideration. But really, if I don't recognize the creator or if it doesn't have a lot of positive buzz around it, forget it. Because this was just so all over the place that it was frustrating.
Yeah, and then it almost, like you said, that slideshow thing, you almost can't read it. It's very herky jerky. Like panel to panel, it can be. It feels like it just doesn't move smoothly.
They were trying to cover too much story in the space they had, even with the 25 panels per page format, and they wasted a number of the panels.
Yep. Because some of the panels, I'm like, this has no bearing on what they're trying to tell. Why is this even in here? But whatever. Next.
Yeah.
I was like. And I was like, you know how I like to go back and I'll usually read something a second time. I'm like, I can't read this again. I literally can't read it again.
Yeah, I was very disappointed with this. I'm going to go with a D- on this. And really, unless you are, I was going to say a hardcore Fantastic Four fan, but I think this will turn them off too. Unless you're like Mike Myers, who seems to love everything, and God bless him. I'm glad he is able to find enjoyment out of so many things. And he genuinely seems to love stuff. I think that's awesome. I'm not wired that way. It's my loss, his gain. But man, I have a hard time figuring out who this would be right for.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I literally could not recommend this to anyone. And I'm like you. I went with a D- and I almost gave it my first F. But I didn't because I didn't want to be mean, but D-, I was like, it felt, you know, darn near broken, and I don't know why they did this, and I hope the editorial never does this to the Marvel reading crowd out there again.
Yeah, this was pretty close to an F, but I reserve that for things that were just such a complete waste of paper, time, effort, everything. And I'll at least give them a little credit for having put in a fair amount of effort on this, even if I feel it was misguided and just a complete train wreck, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would say the guy actually did some research, even though he mishmashed stuff together. He did some research and then created some new stuff, so I'll give him the research.
Totally did research. I just wish he would stop watching cartoons when researching the Fantastic Four. Reading 30, 40 years or whatever of Fantastic Four comics does not seem like punishment to somebody. Shouldn't, if you're doing comics and you want to do this sort of a thing.
It should be a reward, you know? You're a historian now, but anyways, don't read this for your cliff notes on the Fantastic Four. Go anywhere else.
Yes, if you use this as a guide to a trivia contest on the Fantastic Four, you will not win.
Yeah, you will fail.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah, that sounds good.
This is Star Trek Picard Countdown Number 1. This is a prequel of sorts to the Star Trek Picard series, starring, of course, Picard. And they've done some other Countdown stories before, most notably Star Trek Countdown, which laid the groundwork for the J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot movie.
Oh, cool.
And if you have not read that, and you liked the movie and you like classic Trek, I recommend reading those four issues. Because it was kind of what happened in the prime timeline leading up to the stuff that Spock basically gives that campfire story to the new Kirk on.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So it played into continuity. It did well. This, again, sets up the backstory for the upcoming Star Trek Picard series. It's later in his life. There was some major event that just altered his life and career. And now, decades later, whatever, years later, the ramifications are going to come out in the show. And here, it's basically we find out there's some kind of massive relocation of Romulans that they're having to do. And it seems to play into the supernova kind of event that Spock was talking about in that J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie.
Ah, okay. That, all right, cool, cool. So they definitely tie in.
So this seems to play into the events, which are the almost future-most story set in the Prime timeline.
Very cool.
So I thought that was good. There were a couple of places here where, you know, at first it's like, who are these people? Why do I care? Oh, and we flash back to a year earlier. Not crazy about that kind of storytelling, but okay. You know, we get to see some familiar faces, which is nice. We get some of the stuff going on more by implication than flat out being told this is what's going on. It's, oh, okay, I guess this is what's going on. And there's a couple of twists to the story here that really kind of fit the franchise and the characters. And I felt the first issue ended on kind of a solid place for it to end. It's like, oh, well, that does change things.
Yeah, I would agree. This book was really kind of interesting to me because I enjoyed it a lot. And I'm like, was my enjoyment, you know, skewed so much because I didn't enjoy the other two books so much?
Fair enough.
But I mean, overall, though, I really did enjoy this. I liked the Romulans. I liked seeing Picard again. The only thing that I thought was weird was that the new girl, Lieutenant Commander Raffi, or Raffi, Musiker, you know, she refers to Picard as, you know, JL. I'm like, would he let her get away with that? I don't know.
After the events of Next Generation and stuff, where they ended on the Enterprise, he's in the poker game and stuff like that, his walls have been broken down a bit. And he seems a little looser in some of the movies, but even then, he's a little hard-edged at times. So I think there's some aspect of her relationship with him that allows her to get away with that.
Yeah, she must be very close to him. They've probably been together for a while.
They need to establish at some point how she's able to do that.
Because that did seem weird to you, too, when you saw that. I was just like, wow, that seems odd. But, you know, it was kind of cool because I like seeing the Romulans. I like seeing how this is a potential for almost like a peace to be formed at this time, you know, between the humans and Romulan Empire. Mm-hmm. And then the twists in there that happen with the native population. I you know how it's going to play out almost by the beginning, the first page. But I'm on board for the story because I enjoyed this so much.
Yeah. Well, and the whole piece with the Romulans was set up in the unification crossover in season 3 or 4 of Next Gen.
Yeah.
So it's playing into those kinds of things. And I felt they did a good job. His new ship, the USS Verity. I know I did a little research online because it took me a while to find where they actually named it in the issue.
Oh, yeah. They only said it one time.
Yeah, and that kind of threw me. Whereas I caught the number of the ship, so I did a search on Star Trek Memory Alpha or whatever the website is, and there's an NX one, which is I forget what ship that was, and they're like, oh, how was this fit in? All this. So there's some people nitpicking the continuity there. Fine, get it. I'm curious if this is something the writers of the comic did, or if they pulled this ship out of what's going on with the show, which I suspect is what happened. So in other words, probably not their fault, but it looks like a cool ship. I like what they're doing. I like how they're playing into stuff they've established in Next Gen and in the show and the movies and stuff. It captured the tone and the style of Trek.
It really did. And it made me want to go and start watching the Next Gen again, because this is kind of like, okay, you know, when we were kids, when we were young, we would watch the old original Star Trek, but this was, I feel like this one was our Star Trek. And because it came out when we were, you know, around that age where we were impressionable, you know, in our early teens and stuff, I think.
Or at college.
Or college, yeah. Early teens. I can't remember. It's in the 90s sometime, maybe late teens. But
it was 92 that it started, I think.
92. Okay. Well, I graduated in 92 from high school. So it came out when I was a senior in high school.
Okay.
I missed some of it because I went into the military when I got out, but I would watch it when I was at home, you know, here and there.
I'm wrong. It was earlier than that. It was more 88, 89.
Okay, I was going to say, I thought I remember
maybe
watching
87
it.
Either. I graduated from college in 82, so it was 4 or 5 years earlier than that.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, cool.
Sorry.
Cool. No worries. But anyways, it was that was kind of like, so I feel like this is my Star Trek. It makes me want to go back and rewatch all those episodes, which is funny because I pay for a sports site, 24/7 Sports by CBS. And they give me free access to CBS All Access, and now I can do that, I guess.
Oh, nice. Cool. My sister and I have been thinking about watching selected next-gen episodes to prep for Star Trek Picard.
Ah, yeah, so now I can actually go watch the Star Trek stuff. It's just finding time to watch it, you know?
Exactly. That's why we haven't done it yet.
Too much stuff to watch, literally.
I think the art here was good. It was solid. The characters looked like how they should have looked, but were not just such dead-on likenesses. They were kind of still and lifeless or anything. It's nice to have that balance of it's comic art, but I recognize the character.
Yeah, comic art, they're very easily recognizable. The writing was good. It was solid. The voices felt true to the characters, mm-hmm. other than the characters I don't know, which I don't know what their voices are, so I made them up in my head. And like I said, even though you know how it's going to play out, I'm on board because it's written so well that I think they've been doing a good job at IDW with Star Trek in general.
I would agree with that. I've been a fan of their stuff for, man, they've been doing it over a decade now. And everything from Star Trek Year 5 to some of the earlier Star Trek stuff they had done, they've usually got a nice clean art style. Some of it tends to work a little better than other times for me, but usually it's really solid and good. And man, they've done everything from Dr. McCoy, Frontier Doctor, to, you know, some time travel stuff with Gary Seven and some stuff on the Klingons, all up and down. They've really covered a lot of the Star Trek stuff over the decade or however long they've had the franchise. And I like how they partner with the people doing the shows, the movies, and stuff like that to, I don't want to say be in lockstep or whatever, but to honor what they're doing and to be compatible with and not like a jarring difference or something.
Yeah, I would agree. And for me, not being that hardcore of a you know, Trekkie or a fan, everything that we have reviewed that IDW has done has been entertaining to me, been enjoyable. And I picked up the trade of the Year 5 because I didn't jump on board because I enjoyed it so much. So this one, well, I didn't purchase it. I'm reading a PDF, but I enjoyed it enough to where I want to pick up a trade of this.
That's cool.
Yeah, so they've done enough to hook me.
Yeah, I have felt that way on most of the stuff they've done. And again, if you like the Abrams reboot movie, pick up the Star Trek Countdown trade.
I will, yeah.
Because some of those things seem to be set around or maybe a little before these sorts of events.
Oh, okay. And I did like the reboot, so I would definitely want to read that because I enjoyed it.
Well, and again, this is the old Prime Spock. His part of it is what they covered in Star Trek Countdown. Obviously, they weren't dealing with the Abrams rebooted crew, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Now I'm going to try and get my wife on board to watch Star Trek with me. We'll see.
Good luck. I think it's great stuff. I've gone through, I think, all of the shows with my sister over the years, except maybe not all of the animated stuff.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. That's a lot.
I really don't remember. I know we made it through the original series at one point, and that took her a little while to warm up to.
And your sister likes all of it pretty much?
Pretty much.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, you're making a fan out of me again. What's weird is, like, you know, I gotten down to where I just watch the movies because it's not on TV other than the All Access stuff. And so, you know, it's been enjoyable reading these. So thanks for bringing it back into my life.
Cool. Glad you enjoyed it. For me, I went with an A on this. I thought it was really good. The main thing that kept it from an A+, there were a few places I felt the art could have been a little better. Wasn't bad, but it wasn't the best art they've had on, like, some Star Trek stuff before. It was still really solid and told the story well, though.
Yeah, I went with the A- just because of that reason. The art didn't do it for me. If it would have been a little cleaner, not, you know, nicer looking, I probably would have gone with a solid A.
Yeah, I think there was a few places it could have been just a little sharper, a little more rendered, but there was no shortcoming to the art. It could have been a little better.
I agree. So anyways, we ended it on a high because the first two is like, oh man, this is a depressing episode.
Yeah, it happens sometimes that way, but it's luck of the draw as to how things go.
Exactly. But have you read anything good this week over the Thanksgiving weekend and all that?
Oh, let's see. Well, certainly Star Trek Picard Countdown was the highlight of the week. I enjoyed New Mutants. I thought the Invisible Woman miniseries ended solidly. Valkyrie Jane Foster, I thought, was a good read.
Me too. I love Valkyrie. That was good.
Yeah, they're just doing some good stuff there. Most of the rest was just okay. I mean, not bad. There were one or two that were not as good as I felt they should have been.
X-Force is still not doing it for you?
X-Force was one of those that was in that B- category. It was okay, but still not working for me the way most of the other books are.
Okay. I've been enjoying it just because I don't know why. It must be that dark tone, but I like that. But a writer who I'm really impressed with is literally Al Ewing, because he's doing Valkyrie. He's doing great things with Immortal Hulk. I'm like, man, most of his stuff gets so, I don't even know how to describe it, just so out there that I can't enjoy it. But he's just been hitting his stride lately, it feels like.
Yeah, he's been doing some good stuff of late. How did Fallen Angels number 2 work for you?
It was pretty good. I wouldn't say it was the best, but I enjoyed it.
It was kind of a for me. I went with like a C+ on that. It didn't really pull together for some reason.
Yeah, it's what's kind of weird is I like the characters in there so much, so that's what's hooking me. But like you said, the story itself was, it's for me, it's good, but it's not great. So if I go for the story, it's more like C+, B-. But with the characters and the stuff in there, I always go a little bit higher just because I like them. So that's the weird part that hooks me. And the art is still bizarre with the zoomed in stuff on the eyeballs and lips, and he keeps doing it.
For X-Force, that's the case. For Fallen Angels, I think what got me is they had almost a compressed storytelling style where it's, we're just going to jump to this.
Yeah, they do that, yeah.
So, but overall, I think it's a really solid X-Men, relaunch, probably one of the best we've had in ages.
I agree. I've been enjoying it so much.
So I hope they keep up the good work, and I just want to see if they bring in some other characters, maybe a few miniseries here and there. I don't know. I don't want them to grow it too crazy big, but they're having some success, and I want to see them continue with that.
Me too. The one downer for me this week, Action Comics. Did you read it?
Yeah, it was okay.
It was okay, and I forgot how much... Romita Jr., I was like, oh my gosh, the art's just not working for me anymore.
Yeah, there was something that happened to his art style at one point where it went from, man, I really like his stuff, to it's almost, I don't want to say too Kirby-ish, but either the lines are too thick or the characters are too almost overinflated or muscular or something. It's too stylized.
It is, and it's weird. It almost throws me out, and I always forget it because I don't read anything by him for a while, and then he pops back in an issue. I'm like, oh. And it's almost like it shocks my system or something.
And it's not bad. It's just...
it's so different.
Too flavorful for my palate, I guess would be the way to say it at times.
Yeah. He put a lot of paprika in there sometimes.
Something. But the guy has talent and he's a good storyteller. It's just the way he tends to render this stuff or over-render it. I have the same problem with like Bart Sears when he was doing some stuff, or a few other people that... as much as I might like their storytelling style or whatever, they've got such a signature art style that it starts to get between me and the story.
Oh, yeah. There's a few that are like that for me, and it seems like Romita's starting to fit into that category for me. So it's just like, this was the first one. It's like, I'm kind of not enjoying this part of action right now, so I hope he pulls it back out. And then in the latest solicits, I saw there's another Leviathan thing coming out. Leviathan Dawn
Leviathan Dawn. We had seen the tease for that when we talked about Event Leviathan about a month ago.
Are you going to be on board for that?
Actually, it was only 2 weeks ago. It hadn't been a month. It feels so long. Man, I don't know.
I'm torn here with this one. Because that for the Event Leviathan, it was just kind of like, okay.
Yeah, I was sufficiently underwhelmed overall with Event Leviathan that, again, I'm thinking of being a lot more selective in my reading, and certainly the reader I was 2-3 years ago, oh yeah, certainly, of course I'm getting it, who are you kidding? The reader I was a couple of weeks ago would consider it. The reader I'm becoming is not as likely to consider it.
Yeah, so that's where I was like debating, going through my catalog, I'm like, I tend to over-order. I err on the side of caution, and I don't want to annoy Eric too much. Can you add this for me? Can you add this? But yeah, I got to make a few cuts in there too. So, hey, but now, how did your Thanksgiving go?
Thanksgiving overall went well. It was a little different this year. It was just my mom, and my sister, and I. Obviously, Dad isn't around to be there, and that was a little rough. Still, adjusting to that. But we had a good time. It was good. Set up the Christmas tree and stuff like that. We always do that after Thanksgiving and stuff. So no real complaints there other than, Dad wasn't there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got to spend some time with your sister and your mom.
Yeah. No, I've been doing that a fair amount lately for a couple of reasons, and happy to do it and enjoy doing it and glad I have the opportunity.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How about you? Cool. How was yours?
It was good. This was the weirdest Thanksgiving I ever had, because normally we get together with my parents and, you know, my sister, my brother-in-law, we all get there. I have a sister in Michigan and a brother out in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Well, my parents went to Las Vegas to visit my brother and his, he has four kids out there. So they were gone. My sister decided to go eat, you know, have Thanksgiving with her in-laws. So my wife and I just kind of did our own thing. It was the most relaxing time. I got to read a lot of comics, get caught up on stuff. Black Friday, we literally went out and just got some Starbucks and then chilled out.
Oh, that's cool. It sounds nice weekend.
It was. It was like completely relaxing. And because of that, we had a lot of fun.
My sister and I did get some TV watching done. We are now mostly current on the DCCW shows. We've got, I think, two episodes of Batwoman, an episode of Supergirl, and I think two of Black Lightning, maybe?
Oh, okay, cool. You're really caught up.
Maybe only one of Black Lightning. One or two. I think one and the other one's going to come out during Crisis is what's going on. And we just watched the latest two episodes of Arrow and then Flash last night as we record this. So what we've been doing on those is, as we hit the pre-crisis moment, we're recording that part of the season.
Oh, okay. Because I guess there's going to be a big space between the last two episodes and the first three that are dealing with a crisis thing or something.
What I'm planning on doing, and I mentioned this in those episodes, but they're probably not going to come out for a while, obviously, is we're recording the pre-crisis chunk of the season. Then our game plan, and this could radically change as we actually sit down to watch stuff, but for Crisis, is to watch an episode, record. Next episode, record. Do that for the five parts. String those together as an episode, talking about those, maybe touching on a few things from earlier in the season or whatever, but focusing on Crisis.
Yeah.
Release that sooner rather than later as an episode. And then, as like the few episodes afterwards of Arrow air, watch those, record the later half of the season, package that up as an episode that has the first, the Crisis part of it, and then the other part of it. So I may reuse those chunks of the Crisis.
Oh, cool.
That's the game plan. We'll see what happens.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. My wife and I, we watch like Arrow, Flash, and I think she watches, what's that? Legends of Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I'm reading comics when she's watching Legends of Tomorrow. I'm like, limited time. And then I'm trying to remember. We don't watch Supergirl, which is weird because I was enjoying it, but she's like, I don't like it. And so we just haven't been watching that. And what's the other one? I can't remember. Black Lightning. We don't watch that one.
And Batwoman started up this season.
Batwoman, we watched a few episodes and we didn't like it.
Okay, I can see that.
Do you enjoy Batwoman?
So far I'm liking it.
Oh, okay.
It's more of an ongoing story arc than a little more episodic than I would. I'd like a little more episodic maybe than they're doing and stuff. It's good. The show for me this season that's wavering a little bit, and I don't know if they just changed the hair and makeup people on Supergirl or what. Visually, there are aspects of it, particularly of the lead character, that look different, and a few aspects of her costume that just aren't working for me.
Yeah.
And they're crazy nitpicks, I know it.
Hey, but I'm debating actually watching all the Crisis things, so it makes sense. So I don't just jump in it, you know, episode three and not know what's going on.
I would say do that, and I don't know how quickly we're going to watch them compared to when they air, but if people have specific questions about, you know, hey, I'm expecting Easter eggs galore in that.
Yeah.
Feel free to email me, and if I get them in time to record about them, great. If not, maybe we'll talk about them afterwards, or I don't know.
Cool. You'll be my cliff notes if I miss any of the episodes.
I'm not going to say I'll catch all the Easter eggs and stuff, but, I'm game for trying.
Hey, you'll catch more than I would.
So let's see. Coming up, we've got a couple of things going on. We've got the Yearly Comic Spotlight. We actually have an entry on the forum already.
Awesome.
And that's the Yearly Comic Spotlight number 19, 2019, deadline end of 2019 thread. It's a long thing for a thread, but hey, it's clear. That's over on the forum because it's easier to have stuff there versus scrolling off into the oblivion on Slack. We're still going to do, at this point, a decade in review in January that's looking at everything from 2010 through 2019. We'll record that sometime around the beginning of the year. So if you guys have thoughts as to what was a highlight or otherwise memorable event of the past decade, or just something you feel we ought to talk about, let us know. Still haven't really thought through and locked down the format of that episode yet, and honestly haven't gone back to re-listen to the first decade in review that covered the first decade of the century.
Yeah, I got to do that too, so I know what the heck to expect.
Well, and that's, again, not to say we've got to do the same format. If people have thoughts as to a format they think would be good, you know, by all means, let us know.
Please do, because I have no clue. So a decade in review, what do you guys want to see?
The other thing I ought to do is pull out my notes from the Yearly Comics Spotlight for the last decade, just to see if there's anything in there that's, oh yeah, we should talk about that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So that episode is still a little amorphous. I think it'll be fun to do, and I'd like listeners to kind of chime in as to what they think we ought to do with it, or what their thoughts are. And then previews has come out. The preview spotlight, as we record this, is this weekend, which means I've edited it, and it'll go up as the next episode after this, hopefully, unless something else happens. So the next previews is coming out, I think, on Christmas, so December 25th.
Hopefully. That's when it's supposed to come out.
So at that point, the deadline's going to be the morning of January 4th. If people are like, hey, we need more time, let me know. I might be able to push that back a week if that makes sense.
Yeah, because that's Christmas and New Year, so I don't know, like, the mail order stuff, when those previews will come in, and who knows?
Yeah, if when this goes up, people should chime in. If they want me to push it back, I think it probably makes sense, and I reserve the right to do that. It won't be any earlier than the morning of the 4th, but I've got – January is always a busy time for me. It'll be a little more so this year.
Oh, yeah.
Just because for me, it was always birthdays of my mom's, my sister's, my dad's. Dad's is going to take on a different kind of note this year, and then we hit the anniversary of his passing and stuff like that. So, yeah,
there's
just a lot going on for me these days. And,
yeah, I understand.
And that's part of why, honestly, I haven't been as visible or vocal on Slack and stuff lately. I've just been kind of, you know, consumed with some other stuff.
Hey, life happens, and comics are great. They're escape, but yeah, you got to take care of life and your family first.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm trying to do and stuff. And I hope, again, everybody had a good Thanksgiving. I hope they're growing up for a happy Christmas and stuff like that. And again, I hope they participate in the preview spotlight, the yearly comic spotlight, and the decade in review, because it's fun to have, you know, listener participation and feedback and stuff like that.
Yeah, I like hearing other voices than my own. That gets weird.
Yeah,
when it's just me.
It's
no,
nice, particularly on the preview spotlight, to have a lot of different people giving input and new voices and just different perspectives.
Yeah, I agree. That's the main thing for me, is the perspectives and hearing what other people like, because people talk me into getting things I never would.
Yeah.
Wailing Blade. If Brawlinator wouldn't have mentioned it, I wouldn't have picked it up. And I read it.
Sometimes it just takes somebody to point out the right thing about something, to say, you know what, that is something I should be getting.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Batman Universe number 6 from DC, Doctor Doom number 3 from Marvel, and 20XX number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.